Greetings, dear listeners, and welcome to My Streaming Bubble, the podcast where I talk about the shows that I love with the people I tolerate indeed. I'm your host, Jen, and today I am beside myself with excitement as Meg from Bedwetter Behead fulfills her duty and joins me for another season of Bridgerton. Greetings, Meg.
Well, hello there.
Oh, My Fair Lady now?
Oh, that's my Penn trying to be... Actually, no, Penn has a great Irish accent in this season of Bridgerton.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, hi!
Hi!
It sounded so formal. I was like, oh god, has this changed since the last time I was here? And then I was like, oh wait, no, she's Lady Whistledown.
I'm Lady Whistledown. And my scandal sheet. My scandal podcast.
Like, yeah, it's just... Basically, welcome to Regency era Gossip Girl.
Yeah, I guess. I never watched Gossip Girl, but we'll go with that.
XOXO.
Seems to fit. So
I was too old to watch Gossip Girl when I did. So I was like 30 and I was like, they're stupid. Where are their parents? And I was like, I think I really missed the boat.
On that one.
Gossip Girl and One Tree Hill are two shows that I should have watched. Punch sooner.
Oh, see, I never got into those. Or Dawson's Creek. It all seems to feel like, it seems like they're all kind of like the same.
Dawson's Creek I watched when I was a teenager. Like, I watched it when it first came out. These two I just watched because they're on Netflix and I didn't have anything else to watch. I'm like, yeah, fuck it.
Oh, what is this trash? Oh, yes.
Same reason I watched Love is Blind. Why not?
Why not? I have not seen that. So, real quick, that's a reality show on Netflix. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Dating, like a bachelor kind of thing, or like slutty?
Kind of. So, have you heard of the Lifetime classic, Married at First Sight?
Yes.
Okay, so it's like that a little tiny bit. So, okay. It's basically these people there's like a dozen men and a dozen women, and they spend 10 days in separate halves of a warehouse, basically. All the women on one side, all the men on the other side. They don't see each other at all. They have dates in like these little pods where they're each in like a little room and can't see each other. And they're basically talking to each other through a wall.
Well, I've seen movies like that.
Yeah. And presumably they fall in love. And one of them will propose to the other one. And that's when they can finally see each other. So it's like Married at First Sight, except they're not actually married yet. They spend, like, I want to say 4 weeks or something like that after they propose in the pods. Then they, like, spend 4 weeks getting ready for their wedding and, like, being together in quote-unquote real life after their little engagement honeymoon kind of thing that they all do.
Huh.
And then they decide at the altar if they're gonna get married or not.
Oh my god, it sounds terrible. I kind of love it.
You will love it. Aaron watches it. Your podcast Brain Twin watches. Mm-hmm. It is a dumpster fire. Tomorrow they're having their live reunion thing. We just found out for season 4 who got married and who didn't get married.
Oh.
And I'm just a garbage person. I don't know. Like, I don't know what would possess you to go on these shows.
I don't know either.
I feel like the first season at Married First Sight, was like these people genuinely like wanting to take part of this social experiment because it was the first season, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, it was like, nope. I think that show has like 14 seasons.
And oh my god.
Six couples that are still together, but like they have kids and they've been together for a long time, and it's weird.
It's something else.
It's weird. It's the Marriage Mart in modern days. The modern Marriage Mart.
A little bit. Fascinating. Well, I don't know. I feel
here's
like...
a trick for you guys. We're not talking about Bridgerton. I'm just going to talk about Love is Blind.
Haha, gotcha, bitches.
Bait and switch. It was like, they're like in COVID and they're like, how can we exploit COVID?
Yeah.
We're going to make you quarantine for but we're going to make you dates. You can't even just relax in pajamas.
God, that sounds like a nightmare. But also very entertaining. I can see how people are hooked to that. So, God, I have to be careful with my, like, trash reality shows because I can be such a sucker for that shit. Mm-hmm. And I have to be very careful.
We'll find room on your roster.
I'll try. Maybe some as a background. We'll see. Anyway.
You'll be so happy when you finish watching The Last of Us. You'll be like, what other cheerful, happy show could I watch?
God. Oh, that's been a hell of a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And my husband, Tim, listened to episode 5. He hasn't seen the show, hasn't played the game. So he just jumped right in, listened to episode 5 where I watch and react to Endure and Survive. And he's like, I have no idea what's going on, but it sounds like something I would enjoy.
My husband will not watch it.
I'm surprised you watch. I'm so proud of you.
I have been, like, obsessed with the game. Not playing it because I'm terrible at playing video games. But, like, I think in 2015, I bought, like, the remastered version of the game for my husband. Because I like watching him play, like, the story-based video games, like Red Dead Redemption and Uncharted, stuff like that. I like watching him play it. And I saw, like, trailers for this. I was like, this looks really, really cool. I really want to watch this video game. So I bought it for him. And the first time it was taken out of its cellophane was maybe 3 weeks ago when I finally was like, you know what? I'm going to try to play it on the easiest mode possible. Spoiler alert, I die immediately every single day. I have made it past the 20-year mark. Like, I made it to 20 years later, and then I got scared, and I was like, nope. But so I was actually really, really excited when I saw it was becoming a TV show, and then I saw it was Pedro Pascal, and I was like, well, that's it. I'm going to get over any of my fears, and I'm just going to watch it because I will watch anything Pedro Pascal is in.
Mm-hmm. Much love like him.
The rest of the world. Finally.
Oh, well, I've never played the game. I don't do well with those kind of games. Like, when Resident Evil kind of first came out, I couldn't do it. I kept dropping the controller every time I got scared, which just doesn't ensure a win at all. So
does not do anything. Not help. Yeah, the game is too scary for me, but the show... The show is more existential dread. And
it really kind of is.
That's my jam. That's the sweet spot. That's my horror. Thinking about my feelings.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all the feelings.
But yeah, here's another twist. We're not talking about Love is Blind. We're not talking about Bridgerton. Just The Last of Us. Just mm-hmm. whatever's on my mind.
It's one of those fake-out twists. Twist, twist.
Just over and over again. We're going to spend 5 minutes talking about Bridgerton season 2, and it's going to be like, Anthony makes me so horny, and that'll be it.
I mean, I think we knew that after our recording on season 1, which was like forever ago. I don't even remember what we talked about.
Mostly other than about how hot Anthony was.
That, and like also why I liked this show, like why I couldn't stop watching it, because it's not really my thing. But here we are again for season 2. And so we'll go ahead and get in. Meg was supposed to like promote her podcast and all of that, but she's got one. It's called Bedwetter Bed with Carla. And if you know, like, it's on the places. So yes, season 2.
I'll talk about it at the end.
Yes, you can do it at the end. So since you've used up your talking time to talk about Love is Blind and The Last of Us.
Really just putting in my application to come back for other episodes. It's been so long since you've had me on here. I feel like I have to be like, what are you into, Meg? Everything. I'm going to talk about The Mandalorian. That will be our next pivot.
Oh, we're not caught up on The Mandalorian, but we did finish Bad Batch. I love that show.
See,
now we're talking about Star Wars, so.
Ha ha! Full twist. Now we're going to talk about The Mandalorian.
All right. Anyway, so season 2 of the Netflix original series Bridgerton focuses on Anthony Bridgerton, played by Jonathan Bailey, Kate Sharma, played by Simone Ashley, Charithra Chandran as Edwina Sharma, and their tropey behaviors. But we also have Claudia Jesse as Eloise and everyone's favorite dairy girl, or at least my favorite dairy girl, Nicola Coughlin. Nicola Coughlin. I felt like that didn't come out right. As
No, it
Penelope.
sounded good.
Thank you. As Penelope slash Lady Whistledown, and that's just the tip of the ton. So we'll go ahead, and this is your spoiler warning slash brief synopsis. What IMDb says for season 2, episode 1 is Anthony begins his search for a wife, Eloise braves her society debut, and Lady Danbury helps the queen choose a diamond among the season's debutantes. What I says is, it is my duty to love this ridiculous-ass, horny-ass show, because I do.
This season was less horny.
It was less horny, but there was still, it was just all that, like, enemies to lovers,
so
and that,
too,
oh my god, and just the looks, and just how stupid they get around each other. I love it. Yeah. I couldn't
the
get enough of it.
The bane of my existence and the object of all my desires, mm-hmm. like,
ugh.
I
so vexing.
Feel like my defense and love of Anthony in season one gets justified a little bit, but also this season, and I'm spoilers for the books, because I have
yes,
read the
spoilers
books.
For the books, yep.
I did get a little mad at this season, though.
Really?
From the books, because in the books, Edwina is really not interested in Anthony.
Okay.
Like, she doesn't, she's not in love with him or anything like that. She can tell very clearly that her sister kind of has the hots for him. And Anthony starts courting Edwina, but the bee sting incident that we see in the show happens about before, I think, the halfway point of the book.
Okay.
But what happens in that is because we've learned so much more about Anthony's, like, unreasonable fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks he is going to die young because he cannot imagine living past the age of his father. So he doesn't want to love anyone and doesn't want anyone to love him because he doesn't want to cause that pain. And we see a little bit of that, but it's like a little bit when you see like his mom's grief and you can tell that he doesn't want that. Mm-hmm. But like, it's much more clear in the books. But what happens is Kate gets stung, like right in the booble area. And he panics and tries to suck out the venom of the bee sting. Like, it's completely irrational and completely unreasonable. And his mom, her mom, and someone else, I can't remember who, catches him trying to do this.
Oh my god!
And so they have to get married. And I can understand why the show didn't want to do that, because it felt very much like the same beats of Daphne and Simon. But hey, you guys, these are romance novels. They're always going to be the same beats. Just enjoy them.
Yeah.
In a Regency novel, they have to get married if you want to have any hot, dirty sex stuff in this vein. But yeah, so, like, Edwina, she's like, she likes him. Like, it's all right.
Yeah.
But she has a different love interest in the books. Because since her sister marries a Viscount, and then the rest of the book is them trying to not fall in love with each other as they're married. Like, there's still a lot of that fighting and stuff like that.
Okay.
But they're married, so they also get to have a lot of hot sex.
Gotcha.
You know?
Ha-ha.
So it's a different kind. It's an emotional slow burn.
Gotcha.
Rather than the physical slow burn. But that was one of those things that bugged me a little bit about the show, was like, it's a little harder to root for them because Edwina is there falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
And
poor Edwina.
Poor Edwina. But then she, like, and I was also like, well, you're kind of being a bitch about it. But then I'm like, she just got left at the altar for her sister. So, like,
yeah.
I get it.
But I did enjoy kind of Edwina's, like, little arc in this, in the series, in the season, where it seems like very much in the first, at least, you know, the first half before the wedding and everything, she's always looking to her sister, to her mom, mm-hmm. Lady Danbury, before doing anything. And everyone else is making all these decisions. Oh, we're tired. We're leaving now. All of this and that. But when the moment at the wedding happens and she finally kind of snaps out of it and she sees everything for what it is, I just love how, like, strong and confident she is and standing up mm-hmm. for herself and calling out all that behavior, and a little bit calling it out on herself too, of like, how did I not see this before?
Right.
But I just, I loved, I kind of hated how she had to go about gaining that strength, but I enjoyed seeing it by the end, and then of course eventually reconciling with Kate and yada yada.
Well, yeah,
yada,
as soon as Kate almost died, I'm like, oh, everything is forgiven.
Yeah.
No, I like how much more fleshed out Edwina is in the show versus the books, because obviously the books are really only about Kate and Anne. Like, there's other stuff, but they're really just about the two of them. And you can't really do that with a TV show. And I get that. That part just kind of bugged me a little bit, because that betrayal of Kate towards Edwina, like, ow.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved, like, there's so many other changes I really love. I loved that they're the Sharmas. I loved mm-hmm. seeing some of that, the culture and the oh my god, I can't think of the name of the pretty temporary tag. I cannot think of it.
Oh, the henna.
Henna, thank you. Like, and that whole thing that they were doing, the whole ceremony and pre-wedding stuff, I thought that was beautiful, and seeing that culture.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I just love Anthony.
All right, well, let's go ahead and start talking about Anthony and his duty as Viscount into the family, and just doing what he has to do because that's his duty, and duty, duty, duty.
Duty, duty, resent, duty.
Yep. And I would agree with you where your love for Anthony does definitely seems justified in this season, which was actually one of the first things I thought about when I sat down and first watched this season, because I've seen it three times now. So that thought is long since gone, because now I agree with you. Anthony is...
He's awesome.
I enjoyed his tortured, angsty, PTSD-ridden soul. That
crawling out of the water, walking in the rain, trying not to cry until he finds out she's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Finally talking to his baby brother about his dad.
Yes. I thought that was actually like a really, like, for such kind of like a short moment, it was, I thought, a really big deal, a really big moment. I thought it was just really nice. And just, yeah, kind of him, I guess, more embracing his family and less, yeah, seeing it as like an obligation or, you know, this resentment that Daphne calls him. I think it's, is it Daphne or Eloise kind of calls him out? Yeah. Daphne.
Yeah. Eloise would never.
Yeah.
Eloise is like 16 right now. Like, she's 16, maybe 17. She's still pretty young. But I really had liked watching Anthony and Violet's relationship grow, and like seeing where a lot of, like, in season one, there's a lot of them fighting. And even in the beginning of the season, you see a lot of their bickerments, and Anthony has a lot of resentment for his mom. And then you kind of see in the flashbacks why that is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, like, it did my heart good watching Mama Bridgerton go from, like, completely neglect isn't quite the right word, but mm-hmm. she was in such a deep depression that she could not take care of her kids. Thank God they had money so they could hire people to make sure that her children were taken care of. But to see that right after Edmund dies versus we see her now, like, enjoying her family and enjoying her life, and there's always that sadness there,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the overwhelming feeling that she has,
mm-hmm.
and having her finally be like, I'm sorry, I put all of that on you, I'm so sorry, I didn't see it then, but watching how it's like grown and manifested into Anthony just being this mess of a man,
mm-hmm.
hot mess of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally being like, you know, your dad took all of his duties seriously. Like, you can be serious about your familial duties. You can be serious about that, but also enjoy your life.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony has never had that balance ever since his dad died. I mean, he was 18 when his dad died. And then he immediately had to take care of his much younger siblings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed the flashback. And I enjoyed Violet's apology at the end of the season. I thought that was very nice to see. But I thought Oh man, it was so heartbreaking, that whole like flashback, and it's like pre-EpiPens and allergy information, and it's
his
like
mom having trouble giving birth.
Yes. And but it's like, so with the, his dad dying, just that moment for Anthony being there, not knowing what's going on, and then immediately being thrusted into this role of older sibling, being responsible and needing to take care of the kids and making sure they don't see this very traumatic thing you just went through.
Yeah.
And how he managed to kind of get through all of that ish.
Yeah, well, and it's not even just like the older sibling. He immediately becomes the head of this family, which means he's in charge of his mother's well-being as well. Mm-hmm. And his dad is literally still on the grass when the servants are calling him.
Oh, I know.
Lord Bridgerton. And it's like, he does not get a chance to grieve.
No.
He never gets a chance to grieve until, I don't think we actually ever see him really, truly let go and grieve. The closest we get is when he finds out that Kate's gonna be okay. Like, he holds it together until he knows that she's gonna be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finally starts to let go. Like, just please give me just an earth-shattering sobbing Anthony so I can be like, let me hug you. That's the female gaze.
Oh, very much. Very, like, okay, so when he fell in the water and everything, like, it was super hot, but it's also like he doesn't take everything off, but his coat, his little tie, ascot, whatever the fuck, and it's just like that white shirt all wet and sticking. It's like, thank you, Shonda Rhimes.
You know our candy.
Yep.
And then we get that super hot gazebo sex scene.
Oh my lord. Gazebo sex never seems so hot. And you know what? And the bee sting is both, I love this show because it makes the bee sting both traumatic and sexy as fuck all within the same 45 minutes.
It's weird because I'm like, one of the hottest scenes for me with Anthony, he's in the middle of a panic attack.
Yeah.
It's wrong, but like,
let me take care of you.
Yeah.
You poor duty bound baby.
Just the bee, baby.
Oh, but you know what though? Knowing that in the books now that he sucks the venom out of her bosom,
he like pulls her bodice down to try to suck the venom out, and they get caught by like the worst people to possibly catch them.
I love it. It's so trashy. I love it. But it kind of makes a little bit more sense now, where she's like, "No, I'm fine," and then puts his hand over her boobage. And I was like, you're just trying to get felt up a little.
That's what we would be doing.
That's what I'd have been doing.
He was trying
that was
to
me.
Make sure he could hear her heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's okay and everything like that. But, like, how bizarre would that be? Like, you're fighting with this guy and you get a sting and all of a sudden he freaks the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that scene. I was a little bummed that it didn't happen the way it did in the book, because in the book, it's a lot funnier.
I mean, it sounds hysterical, and I am kind of obsessed with it. Tell me more.
Right, let me get my copy. just read the passage.
And this episode will conclude with a reading of that chapter.
Here's
by
the,
Meg.
The fifth twist. I'm just going to read the Bridgerton books out loud.
Oh, so many twists and turns. I love it.
That's where we're going to be. But I'm loving by the end of this season. And I think because I'm glad we got Anthony's story out of the way pretty early on. Because of his duty bound stuff, because of he was so relentless in season one, and he was so like irrationally practical. If that's even a possible thing to be, like, I'm not gonna love anybody. I'm gonna find me the perfect wife, and then have the impossible checklist that no one could possibly.
His interview style courting was a fucking hilarious. I
he
enjoyed
would be a hit
it
on
much.
Love is Blind.
Oh my god, a Bridgerton Love is Blind.
They made a Regency era dating show. Like a reality dating show where modern day people And not the most recent one. There's been one more recently in the past, like, 3 or 4 years. This was, like, 15 years ago. Where, what? Like, they all, and it was so funny because all the women had to follow these rules of propriety. And the men were, like, they had a gentleman's club where they could go and drink and smoke and have women come. Like, what the fuck? To be that historically accurate, aren't you supposed to be looking for love?
That's fucking wild. I can't believe, like, I missed that.
They had, it's old, like, it is. I rented it from not even Netflix. I think I rented it from the library on VHS tapes.
Dang. Old.
Okay, I was trash before it was cool. I like to pretend I didn't like reality shows, and then I'm like, I got a 6-part VHS collection of a Regency dating show.
See, but that's around the same time where I was tits deep in trash reality shows, like all the shit on VH1, and I think that was around the same time. I don't know. Time doesn't matter. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, people like to blame the writer's strike of 2007 for reality TV. That shit's been around forever. 1992, yeah. Real World, baby.
Exactly.
That's the fuck. What a monster. There's the 6 twists. Now we're talking about the history of reality television.
Real World, Road Rules, mm-hmm. Real World versus Road Rules.
Oh my God, so many. But yeah, back to Anthony. I love that you can see that he still has that duty. He still has a sense. He understands his role by the end of it, but he's just very much enjoying life. Because that's what love does, guys.
Mm-hmm.
It fixes everything.
It fixes
all that trauma. All that trauma that you went through.
Just gone. Poof.
Just get laid by the right person.
In a gazebo.
In a gazebo, and it'll be fine. You know, watch her almost die and then be too scared to go see her, and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then, like, dance with her all hotly while no one else is dancing till the queen yells at everybody. It'll be fine. It's easy. I love it. It's easy. Get over your
it's so easy. Just follow these 16 steps and have thousands and thousands of dollars.
Who is 7? This is Meg's self-help hour.
Life hacks by Meg.
You do not want me to give you life hacks, you guys, I promise.
Oh, that'll be our next podcast. But let's see. I want to then make sure I got all my Anthony things stuff out. But I really did enjoy Anthony for all the ups and downs and goods and bads his character went through this season. And I did kind of think it was funny. Or kind of interesting at the end when he and Edwina kind of have that final conversation about everything and why he thinks they belong together. And he finally, she finally hears it, that it's all more about, like, obligation and what's a good fit. And that, you know, because he's a Viscount and she's the Diamond, it works. Obviously. And it just made me, obviously, and it made me chuckle because I was like, that seems so juvenile. Like, it reminds me of high school, like the quarterback and the head cheerleader or the prom queen and all that stuff. Like, they have to be together. And it just, I don't know, it just really made me chuckle. But at the same time, I'm glad that he was honest with Edwina so she could be like, yeah, no, not for me. I want someone that loves me.
And it was like, he was panicking because he does not want to be in love with Kate. He doesn't want to be in love with anybody. More importantly, he doesn't want anyone to be in love with him. Because, like I said, I wish they talked about this a little bit more in the show, his, like, completely irrational fear of death and is completely convinced that he is going to die young.
Mm-hmm.
So in his mind, he is, like, got 10 years at best. And he, like, that's why he doesn't want to fall in love with someone when he gets married. And that's why it was kind of a bummer where he's like, I'm going to make sure I never love at the end of the first season.
Yeah.
But I like where he's just like, this is the practical thing to do. And if I marry you, then everything will be fine. If I marry to you, I'm duty bound to you. And I will, you know, your sister will go off and be in India and she'll be far, far away. And I won't be tempted. And I won't be in love with your sister because she'll be super duper far away. And it's all going to be good. It's all going to work really, really great. And Edwina's like, what about me?
Yep.
And I love that so much. And I think it's so interesting. We talk so much about Anthony and his duty, but what about Kate and her duty and how her sense of duty completely blinded her to not only her own feelings, but her sister's feelings as well. Like, all of, she's only thinking, like, this will take care of my sister. My sister really likes this guy. Push, push, push. Even when Edwina's like, you know what? Maybe this isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe I should find somebody else. She's like, no, you have to marry him, because if you marry him, then I don't have to worry about my feelings about him.
Yep.
Which is stupid. This never works. It doesn't work.
I thought it was very interesting how we kind of see these different characters and their different duties that they have to mm-hmm. their families and whatnot. And Kate was definitely one that definitely stood out as, you know, in terms of like who was most duty bound. We had Anthony and then Kate kind of in order in my mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a shame to kind of see, especially with Kate, how these good intentions just eventually become, because you become so hyper-focused and blinders on and everything, that you miss everything else that's important in that kind of decision-making, like who to be with. And
well, and using her sister to as an excuse to avoid her mm-hmm. own fears and her own feelings and stuff like that, and her own vexation.
He vexes her. I love it. That's so adorable.
The other thing I wish we saw more of in this season was Newton the dog. But I understand why it didn't work, because Newton is like a full-blown character in the books.
Oh, really?
He is a dog. He's obviously just a little corgi dog or whatever, but he is just like this mischief make. Like, it's, you get a little bit of his distaste for Anthony in the show, but he's a hoot. But I think as long as Kate's like, as long as I can focus on Edwina, then I don't have to worry and focus on myself. I don't have to acknowledge that maybe what I've been saying all this time that I want is not what I actually want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just,
Now, why do you think Kate, at least in the series, because I don't know if it's ever addressed in how it is in the books, but in the series where, you know, she talks about as soon as their dad dies, she felt that duty and that obligation to make sure, especially after the money ran out, to mm-hmm. take care of her mom and her sister, who, you know, technically are her half family.
Yeah.
So, and I wonder if it's because Mary so fully embraced Kate, a daughter from a previous marriage and all of that, in this time period where she maybe felt like, where Kate maybe felt like she needed to kind of pick up her father's mantle and taking care of this family.
Well, and it's addressed in the show and in the book. It's a little different just because of the cultural differences between England and India.
Mm-hmm.
They're the Sheffields in the book. They're not the Sharp. Because, of course, it's a Regency era, and mm-hmm. it's a novel written in the 90s and the 2000s, so that everyone's white.
Yep.
Everybody is white and British. But the idea that she has to earn her right to be in the family still. And I think that is so much of it, like, her connection in her mind. And I think this is so much like a child thing. It's regardless of what your parents kind of feel like or treat you, because we never get any indication that Mary's ever done anything but love her as a daughter
mm-hmm.
immediately. But there's still that insecurity, like, well, if I'm not pulling my weight, my link, my dad,
mm-hmm.
is gone. So they can just boot me out whenever. So I'm going to make sure that I'm important and I'm useful and indispensable. And similar but not the same as Anthony, because Anthony, with the way the title and stuff is structured, did become the whole head of family.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that similar thing where I can assume Mary was just as devastated by the loss of her husband
mm-hmm.
as Violet. There we go. I lost the name for a minute. As Violet was, but Kate had this added pressure on herself, being like, well, I have to make sure that they still need me and that they still want me. And in the show, we hear Mary say, like, you've never had to earn your mm-hmm. place in this family. You've never had to. But I think hearing that was really important for Kate, because regardless of, like, insecurities are weird.
mm-hmm.
And I think that's what so much of it was. Like, she had to make sure that her sister was well taken care of. And I think she also felt like it was partially her fault that Mary, and again, this is irrational. It's the same as Anthony's fear of death and stuff is super irrational. And his duty bound to never be happy is completely irrational and ridiculous. And he learns that, obviously. But this irrational feel that maybe it was her fault that Mary has a bad relationship with her parents. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it was bad enough that Mary ran off with a tradesman, mm-hmm. but a tradesman with a daughter from somebody else?
Scandal.
Scandal. And I feel like all of that is just shit that plays in kids' heads. Too, mm-hmm. and if it's never really addressed, which I'm sure it wasn't,
nope,
that just festers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I must have missed all of that in my three watchings, but I do remember, you know, Mary saying like, "You never," but I guess I just didn't really read too much into that. Just more, yeah. Just kind of took it for its surface value and was like,
"I have watched this. You love some more than three times."
Of course, you have. Of course you have. I wouldn't expect anything less.
I love my Regency era shit, man. I love it.
You do.
I love the restraint. And then, like, everything is just under the surface. Like, yes, give me my candies. And I like this even better than I like, well, not true. I love Pride and Prejudice and Emma and Austin. I genuinely love it. But I also love the horniness of Bridgerton.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the horniness of Bridgerton. It is so much fun.
It's great, and you don't see how much restraint there is until you see it really let go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I love that whole kind of like build up and then that release.
Mm-hmm.
Take that however you all want.
And then the release. And the release.
And the release. And release.
Although Kate's underwear was not period. I'm just kidding.
I love it. Meg's here with the fact checking.
Adorable is what it was. I was jealous. I want those shorts. I would not look nearly as hot as she did, though.
Oh, I know.
Those silky shorts.
And I love just all the costumes of, like, and that's, I think, gorgeous. One of the reasons why I'm very much drawn to this, like the bright colors, the fun soundtrack, you know, like the Vitamin String Quartet and all their orchestra pop covers. I love it. Yes. But yeah, it's so shiny and pretty. I like it. But one thing that I found interesting with this show, and since I don't watch a lot of Regency era stuff, like, so within this society, you know, everyone has their societal obligations. You know, Eloise has to be presented and Anthony and his duties and yada, yada, yada. But there's also a fair amount of discussion about choice and that these people, while they have to be married and have to get married, you can still choose who to marry and kind of all these little things. So it vexed me so on my last watching where it's like they have all these rules and, you know, like a lady cannot refuse a dance from a gentleman unless she's already promised to someone and mm-hmm. all that kind of weird shit.
Like the actual legit rules that kind of toss aside because the Bridgerton families are the Bridgerton family, they're weirdos in the
Okay. Like, so they're kind of like the outcast, but
no, but they're the exception. Gotcha. They are very powerful and very popular, but the oddness of the Bridgertons, and it's commented on like here and there. The oddness is they have enough money, which is fantastic, that none of their children have to marry out of obligation.
Fair point.
None of them have to marry for anything but love. And that's where they're weird, and that's where it's commented on, that the Bridgertons will never make their children marry, and in fact will fight against them marrying if it's not for love. Most of the society people, their marriages are not for love. Look at the Featheringtons.
Mm-hmm. That's who exactly, you know, I was thinking of.
Look at the Calperts.
Yep.
Like, none of those people are looking for a love match. If you get a love match, that's an exception.
Mm-hmm.
Most of things are a business arrangement, usually between the woman's father
mm-hmm.
and the suitor.
Yep.
and the women are just kind of there. And you know what? If you like him, great. Look at Mariana. Mm-hmm. Mariana. And the situation that she got in, where she didn't really have a choice. She's making the best of it. And also, I'm kind of annoyed that they even had her in there. Like, I like the character, but also she's supposed to, again, book spoilers, she's supposed to be dead.
Oh.
She's never a character except off stage. She's a character because in the books, and again, I have no idea what the show is going to do, but in the books, Eloise
mm-hmm.
falls in love with Philip Crane.
What?
Via pen pal.
What?
Yes. Because Mariana is dead. And he has two children. And I can't remember. It's been a while since I read it. But I can't remember the whole thing. But that's her match.
What?
Yeah. So
that's bananas.
Yeah. And I'm like, now we know her. So, like,
yeah.
Her death is tragic. She, like, fills her pockets with rocks. Commits suicide. Trigger warning. I'm sorry.
Jesus Whoops. Christ, Meg. No.
Our lighthearted Bridgerton episode.
Yep, that's it. We're going back to VH1 reality shows.
Yeah,
so
right?
Flavor of Love. No.
What is the one with that Tia chick? Oh my God.
Oh my God. Tila Tequila.
Tila Tequila, her like crazy dating competition show. Because she's like, I'm bisexual. That's my whole personality. I've been upset people's perceptions about bisexuality back 50 years.
Oh,
I just want to bone everyone. Anyway, plot twist number 7.
Wow. I'm surprised I remembered that name. Holy shit.
Holy.
Lord.
But yeah, so Eloise bothers me with the show. Like, I get legit angry with her all the time.
Really? Is it just because of the difference of from the book to the screen?
No,
or?
It's just so, it's frustrating because, like, I get it. This isn't what you want to do, blah, blah, blah. Like, but your mom's not asking you to get a husband and get married right now. She's just like, just put on the fucking, like, just, your mom's been through enough. Just put on the goddamn dress. Okay, stop comparing yourself to your sister. Your sister kind of sucks. It's okay. Like, but also, it's not that hard to just dance.
Yeah.
Like, Eloise flouting her quote-unquote duty, and she really doesn't have any. It's frustrating mm-hmm. for me because she is probably in the most privileged possible position that a young lady could be in. Mm-hmm. She is out to society or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but there is no pressure on her to get married or do anything. She could never get married, and her mom would be fine with that.
But it's all about just her needing to follow these steps.
Right. But she has this persecution complex when she's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like,
yeah.
The white woman. Let me find something to be oppressed about. And it's like, it's interesting because yeah. I don't know if you ever watched Downton Abbey.
Nope.
Okay. Well, there's a character, Sybil, in Downton Abbey, who is very much the same as Eloise, and like not wanting to conform to traditional gender roles and being very much for like suffrage, women's liberation. It's about 100 years later, but they're the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I love that character, whereas Eloise I just find incredibly grating because there is that cultural, the societal pressure and everything like that that gets put on her. But also, your mom just wants you to go and be polite.
Yeah.
And she tends to make a concerted effort to be the opposite, which, fine, whatever, but then her obsession with Whistledown and like her going from like, I love Lady Whistledown, but why doesn't she talk about the stuff that I think's important?
Mm-hmm. Meg has got her head in her hands right now.
I keep reminding myself, like, she's a teenager. I'm like, okay, she's just a kid. She has all of this privilege and all of this stuff that she doesn't really understand or appreciate. We see that when she goes to Theo.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, her big thing is like, well, what's our story going to be? Like, why am I here? And he's just like, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she is very much laying the part. You know, like, it's really easy to pretend to be poor when you have a lot of money.
Yep.
She's very much kind of playing that part. I don't necessarily think she really believes all of it. I don't think she's willing to put her money where her mouth is. I don't think she's willing to cast off her family. And she's also very lucky to have the family that she has that will not cast her off after she creates such a massive scandal by running off to the bad side of town with that boy. It's hard for me to figure out my frustrations with Eloise and put it into words. I just roll my eyes all the time.
That's very interesting. I hadn't really thought of the character like that, but I mean, valid points. Cause yeah, Theo does call her out, you know, kind of the, like, well, now you've come down here slumming
kind of
it.
Fuck and this me. Is... Great.
Yep.
Whistletown's not going to pay me the really good money she was paying me.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, and he calls her out that, like, she has nothing to worry about. And you're right. She doesn't realize. It's like you said, it's easy to kind of be poor and do these things that Eloise is doing, knowing that she has the security of her family and her money. And you're right.
Has
I don't,
no stakes.
Yeah. I don't think she would ever completely turn her back on her family for Theo or really for anybody. Because they're still a very close family regardless. And I just, especially Eloise and Benedict, because I still really like their relationship. I still appreciated kind of the moment they had, like, on the swings towards the end, because that was very reminiscent of a moment they had in season one where I was like, I like these two siblings.
Yeah.
That's and their relationship.
And I think I have a teenage daughter also, which her stuff with her mom also frustrates me, because she's like, I'm sorry I'm not Daphne. I'm sorry I can't be perfect like Daphne. And her mom's like, I never fucking said that you have to be like Daphne. Like, say what you want about Violet. I think she has genuinely been a supportive mom who understands her children are different. But I don't think she's doing any overt pressure on Eloise. Like, she's not like, you have to go get married. She's just like, hey, you're of an age. It's time to get you, quote unquote, out into society and to meet people. And to even if you never get married, you still need to know people. Like, you're not going to go run off, be a hermit. And it's interesting, her relationship, her and Kate's relationship.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of the same mind in a lot of ways. Kate's very much like, I'm never getting married.
Yep.
And she has the fucking gall to be like, to Lady Danbury.
Yes. So I thought all of that was interesting. We have these three women, these three different generations of women, of single status for various reasons. And it's like, Eloise is asking Kate, oh, what's it like? You seem fine. Everything seems fine for you. And meanwhile, Kate goes to Danbury. Is like, well, you're fine as a spinster. And she's like, listen, bitch, I live.
I'm not a fucking
I love.
Spinster.
Right.
I am a widow.
Our situations are not the same. I loved that moment. But
it was fantastic. Because, the status of a spinster and the status of a widow are
completely different.
In this time, and Kate's already 26. Like,
oh my god, what a
in the book she was 21 and almost on the shelf, and Vina was like 16.
God,
and I'm like, I'm glad they aged everybody up.
Yes,
because Anthony was still 28 in the books and in the show. I think he's like 30 or something in the show, but either way, they're all little babies. But yeah, even Kate was being honest with Eloise. She goes, well, you know, we're always kind of on the outside. We're sitting on the wall. We're never really a part of things. And that can be really, really lonely. And a lot of people don't want to associate with spinsters, or they take pity on them. And Eloise is like, well, I just don't want to get married, because that's what everyone expects of me, that I'm going to get married and I have to be like Daphne. And again, everyone is like, no one is saying that you have to be like Daphne. Your parents have literally said, don't get married unless you love the person you're gonna marry.
Yeah.
I guess my problem is she's very privileged, and it's galling when she has so many advantages and is very, very privileged and is always like creating constraints for herself to be mad about. Like, she is making issues up for herself to be mad about. No one is ever telling her that she has to be like Daphne. And she's going to her mom all the time. I'm sorry I'm such a disappointment to you because I'm not like my sister. And her mom even is like, you know what? It's really... Her mom is thoughtful enough to be like, here's someone I think who has the same kind of general fuck-em attitude as my kid. Maybe she, like, a match or not. Like, I'm going to invite him. Maybe they can be friends. He has the same rebellious nature. And she's like, well, it's not a party dress. My rebellious nature isn't something I can take out. I'm like, Jesus Christ, your mom is trying.
She's such an angsty
And I'm like, I'm wondering if I watched this when I did not have a teenage daughter, if my view would be different. Because right now, I'm very much like, your mom is just crying. She's doing her best.
And I like Eloise, and I applaud her kind of rebellious nature. But you're right. She has the privilege. Nothing's at stake in all of this. And you're right, she's kind of making up scenarios in which she is oppressed. Like, she is, she's Karen Bridgerton.
Although my favorite is when she doesn't want to hold the baby, which I totally
yes. And or they're like, do you want to see the baby? Yeah, she's like, has it changed since the last time I saw it?
Like, I thought that was hilarious, but at the same time, I was like, bitch, go say hi to your nephew. Yeah. Like, come on. Like, we get it. Have they picked you yet? Like, come on.
Oh, I love this. The little punker Bridgerton. Just...
Right. Well, and there's always been this conversation about, like, making one of the Bridgertons, which, I mean, there's 8 of them. Statistically, there should be one of them that's queer. And, like, talking about Eloise. And I don't like that, if I'm being totally honest, because I feel like she's bucking the system so much in so many ways, and it feels like it's frankly really obvious to have Eloise be gay because she's not falling into the traditional gender roles. Like, she cannot fall into those traditional gender roles and rebel and do all the stuff she's doing mm-hmm. and still be and not be queer. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be that. Like, I have, and we've talked about this, I have been, like, advocating and praying for Bi Benedict so hard.
Okay, and I remember that from our season 1 conversation, because I liked Benedict in season 1. This season, I could not have been more bored with his storyline. I enjoyed him really the high. Little bits. Well, okay, so when he was high was my favorite.
Opium.
And then when he calls out Anthony for his, like, oh, duty, mm-hmm. which was hilarious. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I'm just like, oh, like, okay, I get it. He wants to do his own thing. He wants to get into art school on his own and not have, you know, not feel like, oh, I didn't
He's
make it on my own.
He's also a whiny bitch about that stuff too, though.
Exactly. Like, just go to fucking art school. Jesus Christ. These people are just like, oh, I'm so privileged. It sucks.
And exactly. And that's so funny about Benedict and Ellen. Like, why would Benedict even think for a second that he wouldn't get into art school? What, he would have taken it 100% for granted that his brother, in reality, his brother or his father, if his father were alive, would pay for him. Like, that's the way white men have been doing it for generations.
Mm-hmm.
Why would it be different?
Exactly. But so I thought, like, the first time watching it with the whole, like, kind of art school thing, I was like, okay, are we going to get Bi Benedict in this season? And then literally nothing. So fucking bored. It was just, I was like, why are you here?
Yeah,
you're not angsty enough.
And I was like, be angsty, be high and giggling and stuff. That was adorable.
Yes.
But, like, as soon, like, when he was, like, getting it on with the model in the art school, I was like, okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But then I felt better. Like, I'm gonna put my clown makeup back on. Benedict's the third book in the series, but they pushed him back for Penn and Colin.
Okay.
For season 3.
So, oh. Like,
maybe that'll give him, like, he can still end up with the same person he ends up with in the books. That's totally fine and good. And, like, we haven't met her yet or anything like that. But I would love to just, like, see, like, queer people existed in the Regency era. There was a lot. Like, mm-hmm. there was a lot. And I would love to see that represented more. But yes. Yeah, Benedict didn't give as much. And I think part of it is we had to focus a bit more on Penelope and Eloise mm-hmm. and the Sharmas.
So let's talk about Penelope real quick, because as much as I adore Penelope, and I think that has more to do with the actress than the character, she was the fucking worst this season. Gaslighting Eloise all season long, and then just be, and then when she's confronted by Eloise, her reaction, and it's understandable, but I'm like, God, you're being a bad friend. But I noticed, though, because, you know, Lady Featherington, she was my surprise MVP of this season.
Lady Featherington has been doing some fucking work.
Loved it. But it's like, you see, by the end, you kind of see that Pen is more like her mom than maybe she wants to realize. Because look at how meddlesome these two are.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, I hate comparing it to the book so much because I'm generally very good at, like, this is separate and everything like that. But I thought, I was shocked in the first season when they let us know who Whistledown was. Mm-hmm. You do not find out who Whistledown is until Penn's book. The fourth book. And that's the only time you ever find out. Nobody else finds out before the reader does.
Interesting.
Or any, like, in the book, we'll know, but it comes out in a whole different way in the show and stuff like that. So that was really interesting to me. I don't know how they're going to come back from it. Like, I frankly love sassy, snarky Pen. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I cannot wait for her to really give Colin the cold shoulder for being such a wishy-washy, like, you're my friend, you're not a woman, you're Pen. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
but you're special to me and you're important.
You're special
to me.
You're not a woman, you're Pen. I'm done with women. Mm-hmm. But not you. God, friend zoned her so hard.
Oh, and my she god can't, yeah, like,
and she can't be the first one to say anything because of the society that they're in, but whatever.
Yeah,
everyone's like, hey, look right in front of you, Colin. Look at you dancing with Penelope, Colin. What about Pen, Colin? He's like, who's that? Oh, my good pal? Mm-hmm. My good Pen pal?
Pen pal.
But I agree about the gaslighting, Eloise, the whole thing. I get where she was afraid to tell her, but, like, she should have said something to her when Eloise was like, the queen thinks I'm Whistledown. Mm-hmm. Pen should have been like, okay, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
Yep.
I'm the anti-hero. And then figure out a different way for them to get Eloise out of trouble, because she went nuclear.
Yes, she did. Like, she didn't have to go that hard.
She heard Sophie be like, you know, a woman would never say that she would look ugly in her own dress or blah, blah, blah. And she was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call her a radical.
Because, yeah, she wasn't that mean to the Modiste. She just called her old but capable, but yeah. It's like she straight up set Eloise on fire. That was, yeah. I was like, that's a bit much. And then her
Eloise had enough little things going on with her, like yelling at that dude on the dance floor, like, next time you want to be nice to me, maybe don't insult all my sex in the process. And I'm like, I get it, like, snaps for you, girl, but cut, like, just fuck's sake, stop.
Yeah, she couldn't have written about how resistant Eloise was and how that doesn't fit into the ton and yada yada yada, like,
how socially awkward and how she doesn't fit in, blah blah, but no, she went full blown, this girl's going to the bad side of town, meeting a hot poor guy alone.
A hot poor guy.
A hot poor man all by herself, and she's a radical. Like, she went full on not just destroying Eloise, but the whole Bridgerton family. No one came to their ball. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And this was right after. She could have even not written about Eloise. She could have just written about the Bridgertons after that wedding scandal.
Oh, yes.
That would have been enough. Like,
absolutely.
But she really went hard. And part of me was like, I love that. I love that, Pen. You're so mean. But then she's surprised that Eloise is mad at her.
I know. And it's like, one of the lines that during that fight that just I absolutely hated was when Penelope is like, do you know how hard it was for mm-hmm. me to keep this from you? Like,
bitch, you didn't have to.
It ain't about you right now. All right. So it's like, I love Penn. I love seeing her confidence as she's kind of doing these, you know, deals with the modiste and posing as Lady Whistledown's handmaiden or whatever at the print shop. And we get her little bit of her dairy girl accent, which I was like, yay. So I loved seeing like that confidence and that kind of business savviness of her. But at the same time, it was just, there was a lot very much that was rude. Like disappointing and upsetting because I like Penn. And
but then you also have to look at this from Penn's point of view too. Eloise, like we have talked about several times, has every privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Every privilege. She has a family who loves her and values her for who she is and who will never force her to get married. She is in a comfortable living situation. She knows that she has a brother who will always take care of her. She doesn't have to get married. She doesn't have to do anything. Penn is in the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Penn is so tightly confined within this family that has endured scandal after scandal, money loss after money loss, with a mother who thinks she is worthless, with a sister who constantly degrades her. She has one outlet, and this is her way of getting independent. And Penn mm-hmm. makes so much money.
Yeah, she does. Down.
And good for her for not sharing with her mom, because frankly, she doesn't deserve it. And so I can see her point of view where she does go so hard on Eloise, but I think in her mind too, Eloise can stand it.
Yeah.
The Bridgertons can withstand this scandal. And they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the end of it, Eloise is fine. They're fine. Yep. Their relationship is tattered, but Eloise is okay.
Yes.
And the Bridgerton family is okay. Penn's family cannot withstand another scandal. Like, at all. I think part of the reason she went so hard is some resentment, because Eloise has everything Penn wants.
Good point. Yep.
And never have. And she had, like, we talk about how Eloise has all this privilege that she's bitching about. She's complaining about all of this privilege and status that she has. And Penn doesn't have any of that and can't complain.
Yeah.
All she can do is write and write as Lady Whistledown, and that's how she gets her independence, her barbs. Mm-hmm. That's how she can finally talk about how she views the world, because she is not in a position to be able to turn down a dance from any man.
Mm-hmm.
She's not in a position to burst out yelling at a man in the middle of a dance. And Eloise just, again, like she's like, oh, poor me, I have too much. I have too much freedom. I don't like it because my family expects the bare minimum from me.
You know, and it's like, you know, you mention all of that and you're right, because it's like, at least, you know, we mentioned Violet tries to set Eloise up with someone that she thought was going to be, you know, similar mm-hmm. personality types. And it's like, Violet's at least trying, whereas Lady Featherington just has straight up written off Penelope. Yeah. Like, she just is like, she's never going to have someone find someone. So
Penn
she doesn't
can't
put
even
in
pick her own clothes.
Yes.
Like, she's not even allowed to pick her own dress. She has to wear unflattering, awful dresses that her mother forces her to wear.
All of those dresses are offensive to my eyeballs. I cannot stand.
And her skin tone and yes. her hair color. Like,
Yeah.
I think that's where some of my Eloise from. Like, I see Penn's point of view a lot. It doesn't mean that she was the right to do what she did.
Sure.
Absolutely not. But you can understand where she's coming from when she mm-hmm. does it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, speaking of the Featheringtons, like I said, Lady Featherington being the surprise MVP of this season, I did not see that coming. So when that all played out, like the first time I watched it, I was like, and I got a big dumb grin on my face. I was like, all right, she just went up a little bit, like a couple of notches in my book, where I was like, damn, you are fucking ruthless. Do not fuck with Mama Featherington.
Only she's allowed to fuck around with her kids.
Gonna marry no her daughter else. Off to Cousin Jack.
They'll say so much. Oh my gosh, look at this scandal in the orangery. And they're like 10 feet apart.
And like Lady
and then
Featherington.
Making out with her kid's fiance, aka her nephew.
Yes.
/ cousin. I don't know. Kissing
whatever.
Was a thing, but whatever.
Yep. It's very regal, you know? Very regal. It's like royalty. Oh my God. But
don't
that was.
the health problems of the royal families.
But that was so much fun. And like I said, that was just kind of a surprise little twist at the end mm-hmm. that I didn't see coming with, at least with her. And now they at least have a bit of money, and Cousin Jack is of no more. And, you know, good for Colin for calling him out the way he did. And it's like with Colin, I'm a little back and forth. Like, on one hand, I really kind of admire that he went to Greece, and other than him always talking about it, but that's what people do.
Yeah.
But this kind of introspection that he had of like needing to make himself happy. But then, yes, he goes to Lady Crane's, and it's like, well, what was the fucking point of that if you're so right. enlightened now? And then like Philip with this odd obsession with Colin, I did not understand any of that other than wrapping up that mm-hmm. that plot line with Lady Crane.
I loved her telling him, why are you here?
Absolutely. Like, I mean,
like,
yes.
stop. Like, and that you're right. He is a bit of a Budinsky. And I swear to God, when he was talking to Jack, and I was like, not Colin. Being the most naive, gullible baby Bridgerton of the world. Like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Marry Mariana and she'll have babies. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, she's trying to sit. I'm sorry, that whole thing in season one was funny. But, like, I did not see the point of him going to see mm-hmm. Marianne, except for her to tell him off, be like, hey, yep. I have a life now. I have children and a family, and I'm happy, and I'm making the best of the situation that I'm in. Why are you here? Like, what's the point of you coming and being like, hey, sorry, I was kind of a dick. Sorry, mm-hmm. I, like, abandoned you. Like, so this was 100% to make himself feel better. And I think he has a bit of a selfish savior syndrome or complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wants to save her, even yeah. though she is safe. She's married. She has her children. By all accounts, she is happy, which is why I'm like, God, I don't know what they're going to do. why did you make me like this character and feel sympathy for her if she's just going to die?
to make it hurt that much more.
Right. And then he's like, well, I have to save the Featheringtons again from another disaster again.
Yeah.
Like that. And him being a dick to Will, which will like Will in the little gentleman's club. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I want that to work out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's like, sorry, I had to be so mean to you. I had to sell it, make sure that it was fine. Like, and then he's like, I'm going to dance with Pen because she looks sad. And da-da-da-da. But then, like, I love Colin, but I like Colin. He is very irritating. He has that shitty-ass goatee.
Yeah.
Like, this is how we know time has passed.
Yeah.
He's been gone a while.
He's
got shitty facial hair.
I laughed so hard when I saw that. It's like, a changed man, a traveled man, a learned man.
A learned man. I shaved myself. And he's got scars all over. He looks 75 years old when he comes back. I was cast away in the dirt.
Fucking Colin. I like Colin.
I like him too, but it's just like, as our dear friend Carla says, he is an unbaked cookie.
He is an unbaked cookie.
He is raw dough.
Like, he's such a middle child, right? Like, kind of trying to do anything and everything to stand out on his own a little bit, whether it's calling out Lord Featherington and saving the Featherington, saving, you know, with the savior. Like,
he's very young. No one has any expectations of him right now. He's maybe 22, 23. Like, he's a baby. If Anthony is 30 at best,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, Benedict's probably 28. Daphne is probably 25. Like, they pop those babies out.
Oh my God,
quick.
Yes.
Like, but there's 18 years difference between Anthony and Hyacinth. Yeah, Hyacinth is the youngest.
And okay, why that name out of all the H names? She could have picked
Heather. Helen was taken. Hermione.
Oh,
no one knows.
That's the one name I can't say very well.
Hyacinth.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
But we'll see how Colin goes. I'm very I love Colin and Penn's story.
I'm kind of excited to see. I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out on screen, and then for our third recording where you're like, this is where they fucked up.
Well, I'm excited about how mad Penn is at Colin.
That'll be nice to see. That'll be refreshing.
He needs to get punished. He needs to chase her a little bit. He needs to, repent for, I know he didn't know that she was listening, but come on. Everyone was making fun of her.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to go along.
And it's like, at this point, how many people have told him, Penn, look in front of you. Penn, Penelope. Yeah.
And he's like, what? My good friend Penn, my asexual good friend Penn, who has nothing, that's a whole other thing. Yeah, our third installment in 4 years.
Good Lord. All right. So we'll see. And then real quick with Mr. Mondrick, I have to admit, his presence in this season, at least when first introduced, kind of felt like, oh yes, this character exists. Almost like an afterthought, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But, I guess good on, boxer turned entrepreneur, and hopefully his business does well. I don't know. I don't know what to say because I didn't know how to feel about him being in this season other than him and Lady Crane. These are just kind of tying up some loose ends-ish from season one.
Right. Yeah, and the last thing is, and we didn't even really need either of these storylines to be tied up.
I thought they were tied up
enough. He's starting a gentleman's club, and he's like, this is going to be an equal gentleman's club where anyone from any class can be. It's a gentleman's club.
Yeah, it's all dudes.
No one is going to be able to pay the dues, except for the men who are going to go to White's or one of the other many gentlemen's clubs in London. But I was like, ooh, there's a hot man I can look at for a minute, but yeah. The story didn't really go anywhere, and I felt like I was frustrated a bit with his and Mariana's storylines or whatever being in there, because I feel like that was time that could have been used to further Benedict's story a little bit, flesh that out a little bit more, or introduce Francesca a little bit more, because her, if this show continues, her story is going to be coming up, or
literally anything.
Anything. But I kind of feel that way about the Modiste too. She at least had a point.
She had a purpose.
There was a purpose for her to be there, but Colin could have gone anywhere to make a deal with Jack. It didn't have to be in this club.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? We'll see. We'll see where season three goes with that. But I agree with you where it felt like, okay, this person's there.
Yeah.
That's hi. That's great.
Nice to see ya. You look great.
You look amazing.
You look amazing.
I love it. And I feel like the only real reason to have Mariana come in there is if they're going to follow along with the stories of the book is to bring Philip back, or at least into our sphere, into our world at all, to introduce him more than the guy who comes and marries his brother's pregnant girlfriend.
And it's just, again, it's okay, so Lady Crane made sense in that, I accept it for what it was, where she's she's basically wrapping up her own storyline from season one and telling Colin, I'm not gonna be your fantasy and you need to let go of that. Loved it. It was great. But then that weird obsession Philip had with Colin and Greece, I was like, what the fuck is this? And what purpose is
spoiler,
this other than
Philip
for her
is
to
in
be
love
annoyed?
With Colin. He's like, let's go to Greece.
Well, no shit.
Did you hear that Greece said that the only true love was between two men?
I mean, really, unless that's it.
For misogynistic reasons, but that's what they thought. Because they thought women couldn't be as weren't mentally equal to men, so women couldn't love like men could. Quote me on that. Don't quote me.
It'll be in the episode description.
Yeah, right. Meg, Greek misogynist slash gay.
So that's kind of, I think, really all the main ones I wanted to talk about. I mean, of course, we've got Queen Charlotte and we see the king and that kind of moment with Edwina and smoothing
That
over
was
that kind of,
beautiful.
I loved that. And then that really seemed to help the feather or help the Bridgertons and the Sharmas kind of repair their reputations by having the queen declare that the wedding didn't happen simply because she didn't want it to.
Yeah, and I think that was so much more the queen protecting Edwina than Anthony and Kate, to be honest.
Oh yes, absolutely.
That gentleness and that care and discretion. Most important.
Yep.
That Edwina used with the king really kind of endeared that.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was so sweet. And it was just kind of nice to see the queen in a slightly more vulnerable state than we've maybe seen her in the past. So,
right.
And then we get the shot of her sitting bedside to the king. And it's like, you get that sense that there was a lot of love there. And I'm kind of looking forward to like the prequel series with the queen. So what is happening to me?
Let me watch this series and know how it ends and be like, this is so sweet and tragic. Like the same thing with the Bridgerton books prequels about Violet and Edmund. Like, let me read this love story, but I know that he dies at 38 years old. That's awesome, guys.
Don't you just love the things we do to ourselves for air quotes entertainment?
That pain.
All right. Any other characters we didn't get to that you just have to get to?
I was like, is there anyone else you have to talk about, Meg? Anyone at all? God.
Have to.
The Kelpers, no.
Okay. But seriously, though, the daughter, her hair vexes me because
Cressida?
One, yes, it's really weird, even for all those up hairdos that we see. It's like
that's
the
so
one
weird
that...
because that was not like a Regency era thing to have those updos. That was much more like 18th century France.
Yes. Okay. So, like like how tight it is, how tight her hair is. It gives me a headache.
Oh my
seeing
God,
her hair.
Oh, that hair.
That poor woman. Yes.
It reminds me when I was a kid and it was like, if anyone could see that you had hair on your head, that's not good. We got to spray it down, pat it down. Mush it. I can't think of too much. I could talk about Lady Danbury for like hours because she is fucking amazing.
She is.
I love her. I love when she is like to Kate, like, hey, just tell your sister how you feel. Maybe try honesty for a change.
And then I love her, the closeness with her and Violet, Mama Bridgerton.
Yes.
And it was kind of sad when they were like mad at each other because of the whole deal that Kate had with the Sheffields and how that all came out. I do love Anthony's defense of the Sharma family to the Sheffields. That was, I loved it. He straight up calls her out. He's like, maybe your banishment was because you suck. You're a shitty person.
I thought you were going to be like, I do love Anthony Head. And I'm like, same, Giles for life. He's been playing kind of assholes lately, and I don't know how I feel about it. Between Rupert and Lord Sheffield. I loved that scene, though. I thought it was... And that was one of those times he was like, why... Did you not just let them break up, Kate? Why are you sitting here insisting that he has to marry her? Like, I understand the reputation situation or anything like that. But Anthony was totally willing to be like, you know what? I'll take the blame. It'll be my fault, as it should be, because he should, a gentleman, he can't call off the wedding and maintain her dignity and her standing.
And that's another thing about, like, in this society where the woman has a tiny bit of choice where it's like the man can't call it off, but the woman can. in a way to maintain, as you say, her dignity and her honor and all of that stuff. And I was like,
desirability to others.
Yeah. And I was like, huh.
Patriarchy's a hell of a drug.
This series just vexes me in that way. And it's how much I enjoy it vexes me.
All about the restraint, man. It's all about, like, that.
That's true. Like, anyway.
So close. But yeah, I can't think of a character really that we didn't touch on.
Okay. Well, I just have kind of one last thing that I need to mention, and it's my favorite moment out of all of season two. And that is when it's after everything has kind of transpired, the wedding and everything, and they're walking into the museum, and Kate walks past Anthony, and he stops and he sniffs the air. It's the corniest shit, and I love it so much.
Sniffing her, not just her though, but like, yeah, she walks by and he's like are you a puppy?
And then Lady Danbury being there to witness it and just being like, really?
Like, are you kidding? Well, like right after the wedding when they're standing there and they're like, we can't keep these two together, like they can't be near each other because they're like basically both sniffing each other's asses like they're dogs. And the dude is like, I can't believe I didn't see this. Oh, and I'm like, bitch, me too.
Oh my God, poor Edwina. And then the whole thing with Edwina being like to Kate, like, well, I think you need to just spend more time with him and get to know him.
Gosh.
Like, oh, what the fuck is this garbage? And why can't I get enough of it? Next episode.
I need him to love you.
Oh my Lord.
I think that's taken care of. Yeah, I love that. Like, my favorite's like, all my favorites is when they're fighting because they're so horny for each other. Mm-hmm. Just give me that. Inject it into my veins.
Or just the competitiveness between the two. The horse racing scene is one of the best scenes ever. Just the two of them screaming.
Yes. But yeah, like, it's like the, you're the bane of my existence and the object of all my desires. Like, I love how angry they are about how hot they find each other. They're so mad about it all the time, and I love it. And the whole, like, yes, I hate you because you vexed me. And they're like, well, you don't think you vexed me? And they practically just do it in the library. Daphne is just like, oh my goodness, what did I walk into? And he's like, don't worry about it. It's fine. I'm going to marry your sister. Everything's under control. It's going to be great.
Oh my God.
Are you sure that you want to marry the, like, her sister or not? What about her? And he's like, no, she vexes me. You don't understand. I have a responsibility, and for some reason, duty. I twisted it into my mind. My duty is to marry the sister of the woman I want.
God, I love this messy ass show. Oh, give it more. Give me more.
It cracks me up, and like, there's stuff that I'm really bummed wasn't in there. Like when, so. But I know it couldn't be. Like, I know it can't be. There's only so much vulnerability and messiness you can really show with these characters. And, like, a lot of the stuff that I miss from the show, from the book in this show, couldn't happen because the only way that the scenes happen is if they're already married. Like,
okay.
Kate is desperately, horribly terrified of thunderstorms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so when and in the show we like see she just can't sleep because it's raining out and it's a storm and Anthony is there. That was a whole complete, like, she has a full-blown panic attack. She's hiding under the table. He finds her and they have a little heart-to-heart situation. Like, I get it, that couldn't happen in the show, but I kind of miss it because I wanted to see more vulnerability from Kate to anybody other than her sister.
Sure.
You know, because she seems pretty impenetrable to everybody else. I'm like, I don't know why you have to be so rude to Lady Danbury when you're staying in her house and she's sponsoring and you, like, literally just met her. You can just say thanks.
Exactly.
Like, quit throwing shade on their shitty English tea. We get it.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. Just say no thank you. God. It doesn't always have to be a whole thing. That was my running theme with both Kate and Eloise. Like, it doesn't have to be a whole thing. You could just say no. Like, it's cool.
Oh, but it has to be, because everything is so dramatic in these times and in the town. And
it's so dramatic.
so dramatic.
And off to your little newspaper boy who's like, bitch, I'm just trying to live.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm going to get fired and then I won't be able to feed my family. Sure, be sad about your scandal paper.
A little scandal sheet, yes. And I just love how horny the queen is for her little scandal sheet. She calls off the outcomings of all the ladies.
He's so obsessed.
I love it. All right. Well, let's see. I think we'll go ahead and start on the Midwest goodbye, since I think we've covered just about everything. But we'll start with Stray Bubbles, just in case there's anything else that we didn't get to. So last chance to bring up notes, fun facts, etc.
Well, I'm going to, since you just said it, I'm going to bring up my hopes for next season.
Okay.
I'm just going to reiterate. I really
are you just going to read us
Colin to have to like beg for some attention from Penn, because like I don't think they're going to do it the same in the show. In the books it's like she finishes growing up, cuz she's again like 16 in the first few books.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets taller, she loses the baby weight, which I don't think they're going to, and I hope they don't do that in the show or whatever, but she finally picks out her own clothes that are flattering on her color and her coloring and stuff like that, and all the men are panting after her.
Oh,
and
really?
Colin like has to beg for her attention, and like I like
good.
Give me please, like I want her to be cold and distant with him for a little bit. I want a little bit of that like friends to enemies to lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Situation. I want a second chance romance. I'm excited we're gonna see more of Anthony and Kate in season 3. I know that's gonna happen. And just give me bisexual Benedict, for the love of God.
Make his do make it. His storyline.
He's already in art school.
Exactly. I mean, my expectations.
Friends that he's not mad at. Like, come on.
Yes, let's please do something.
Let him be horny
with Benedict.
For a male model.
Just anything interesting. This season, it was so boring. And I mean, he was funny because he's able to kind of float through life as, mm-hmm. you know, this Middleton or middle ish.
Middleton. Middleton Bridgerton.
So it'll be, I want to see more. And mm-hmm. more interesting. And I think it'll be really interesting and fun to see this twist with Penelope and Colin if they go the route you've mentioned in the books, where she's very much where he has to fight for her attention. Because
yeah.
I think if they continue on with how it's been, it's just going to feel a little stale.
And sad
with the first two seasons. So I'm hoping for a nice change. I would like to see Penelope, some of that kind of closeted confidence that she has behind the quill, to start coming out and more present.
I think that is something we're gonna see, but I'm here for, and their ship name, I don't know if you know,
what is
it? Pollen.
And they weren't featured in the B season.
I know,
disappointment.
Every season's the B season of Bridgerton. But little Pollen, I think that's gonna be the case. I think she's gonna have, it'll be, personally, like, I like the Lady Whistledown thing. I would like to see them step away from it a bit more. I want to see Penn not need that outlet quite as much, like right in mm-hmm. from time to time, but I want to see her really come into her own as
Absolutely.
herself, rather than through this anonymous Gossip Girl bullshit
mm-hmm.
that she's doing. But we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I want my bi Benedict. I want Eloise to frankly grow up. Like, I know she's young, and I know I ragged on her. I do like Eloise. I promise, I like Eloise.
Mm-hmm.
Promise. I see a lot of potential, and I think that's where it's frustrating for me, because, again, it's like, she has every advantage,
mm-hmm.
and she's just so mad about it. Like, she's desperate to be, like, disenfranchised. Like, please oppress me. Please, like, she's a Republican is what's going on. Right. She's a Christian dying to be oppressed. So if she's not oppressed,
100%,
she's going to make up an oppression. She's mad at Bud Light right now.
She's so mad at Bud Light that she's going to drink Coors and then be mad at Coors.
And then realize every beer she would buy are all owned by four people and not understand how capitalism is bad right now with all the monopolies. Plot twist number 23. Listen to my anti-capitalism.
Current events.
I know, I want her to. And I think so much of it is her relationship with Violet. I want to see that improve. I want that, and I think a lot of it is, like, I get teen girls and their moms, they're always strife relationships. I think any woman can understand that at one point was a teen or has a teenage daughter. Like, someone said that having a teenage daughter is like having a mean little sister, and it's true. It is so true. They're so mean. But I want to see a little bit of that. I want her to understand that so much of the pressure that she's feeling is so internal. It's the pressure that she's putting on herself to think that everyone is expecting her to fit in this box. And no one really is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one who matters. The rest of society, who cares? Her family has already been like, we don't care as long as we have each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. That will be okay. And so much of the perceived pressures she has are entirely in her mind.
Yeah.
And I want to see her be able to step outside of that. And I want her and Penn to repair their relationship.
Yeah.
Because absolutely. You're going to be sisters.
Yeah, I definitely would like to see, because that was pretty heartbreaking to see their big fight and them. And Eloise just being like, I never want to see or speak to you again.
That won't last.
No, it won't last. But that it was still last. Just like, aw.
Also, I can't wait to see what Mama Featherington comes up with next
year. No shit.
How are we going to raise the stakes for the Featherington?
Oh my God. Well, I'm very curious about that, because hopefully now their standings within the Ton are going to be up and they're not going to be so shunned anymore. There won't be the disdain of the Ton. So it'll be kind of fun to see what shenanigans she comes up with,
yeah,
and everything. So, because like I said, she surprised the fuck out of me this season and I loved it. I loved it.
I was shocked. I wasn't shocked. That's not fair, because I think deep down, no, because I was like, I was shocked she didn't run away with him to the Americas, but her motivation has always been to take care of her girls. She goes mm-hmm. about it in a really messed up way, but she loves her daughters.
Mm-hmm.
At least the first two.
Yeah.
But
she still doesn't think that highly of Prudence either.
No, but they're her daughters. Her daughters. Whole job is, and it's a lot like Mama Benedict, or Bennett, Mama Bennett from Pride and Prejudice, where her duty, she has three daughters and no sons. Her duty is to get those daughters well married and taken care of. Like, that's it. That's her job as a mother of daughters. And it's the same thing with Mrs. Bennett in Pride and Prejudice. And they're both pretty ridiculous, and they're both out there, and they both have all these really schemes and machinations that never really go the way that they're supposed to go. But her whole world, and she knew that if she left, her daughters would be destitute.
Mm-hmm.
Penn would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And Penn would not take care of her sister.
No.
Not at all. I don't think at all.
No, Penn, I don't
throws
think so.
Her sisters under the bus as Lady Whistledown every goddamn chance she can get, and I love that for her. But I want to see what Mama Featherington is up to. And I am sunburnt, which is awesome. It's gonna snow in 2 days and I'm sunburnt.
Awesome.
Hi, Wisconsin.
Yay! Spring in Wisconsin!
Now we can get that Midwest goodbye! That's another hour and a half!
That's right. All right, so I think I've got all my must-talks about out. I've really enjoyed this season, and I really enjoyed the show. I like still
how
don't
mad you are all the time.
I'm just so confused by it.
Oh, I love it, Jen. You're watching Bridgerton. I'm obsessed with The Last of Us.
What the fuck has happened, man?
We're trading personalities.
Some shit. 2020 just really fucked everybody up.
COVID made some real changes, guys.
All right. Well, then we'll go ahead and we'll start with our, we'll go to the 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage, Bridgerton edition. And this is where we get to Senior Cage in 6 steps or less. Meg, how did you do? What?
No, it's my fault. I didn't realize there was 2 pages to the L.
Oh!
Hang on. Let me think. Let me think and pull up the Oracle of Bacon.
Oh, Meg. See, this is what happens when we don't record with each other for a long period of time.
Well, that whose fault is that?
2020s?
I don't know.
Look, I've been very busy and whatnot. Mostly with whatnot.
All right. Let me look here. I'm definitely thinking of this off the top of my head and I'm not searching.
I love it. You do your best work this way. I love it.
I do, you know? It's the same thing I do with favorite rapper. Aaron every time. You know what? Hang on. There's Julie Andrews. That has to be a thing. Because Julie Andrews is in this show, you guys. Mary Poppins herself.
Mm-hmm.
How do you solve a problem like Maria? Okay, so Julie Andrews was an Enchanted with, you know, everyone we know, Fred Tatasciore. You know, good old Fred.
Good old Fred, yep.
Was in Teen Titans Got to Go to the Movies with Nicolas Cage.
Awesome.
I had to look up this guy. I have no idea who this man is. He's a voice actor. I think he played one of the mice or something, one of the animals in Enchanted.
It wasn't Alan Tudyk? He does such great animal voices. Animal characters.
Oh, wait, here we go. There we go. This is better. She was an Aquaman. Julie Andrews was an Aquaman with Nicole Kidman, who is in Trespass with Nicolas Cage. Done.
Very good. Excellent.
Thought of that all myself right now.
You did amazing. I can't believe you had that all just stored in your brain and
right
not
there,
on the internet.
Right there. Thank God the editing is a thing that's going to happen.
Is it? All right. Well, I went with Simone Ashley, who plays, as we mentioned, plays Kate. She was in Broadchurch with Arthur Darvill, who was in The Sandman with Patton Oswalt, who was in Bored to Death with Jason Schwartzman, who is Nick's cousin.
They weren't in a movie together.
What do you mean?
Well,
yeah, that
like the degrees have to be in the movie together?
Nah, you just gotta get to Nicolas Cage.
Well, in that case, hang on. I think how about this?
Okay.
I in Public Enemy with Christian Bale. It's in Captain Crowley's Mandolin with Nicolas Cage, and I watch Bridgerton.
I think there needs to be some sort of contest where between Bedwetter Behead, My Streaming Bubble, and It's a Fandom Thing, how many times does Meg bring up that she was in Public Enemies?
Only when you guys do the 6 degrees. And the Aaron's obsessed with Christian Bale, so I have to bring it up that
I was just a little bit
this far from him for a long time.
I know. You love it. It's a fun fact.
I like how I said this far in an audio podcast situation, so you guys know exactly what I mean. It could be any distance.
It was super close. She didn't have her arms,
It was 3 feet.
It's like the size of, the northern she caught the other day. It's a fishing joke. That's all I know about fishing.
The northern? What's the northern?
I don't know. A fish. Like, my grandpa used to catch northerns and then hang the heads on the clothesline. I don't know why.
Fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, hey. Right next to your britches.
Yeah.
Right next to my bed sheets. It smelled of fish every night.
That's just how things were done back in the day, you know?
I still can't sleep unless I have a fish head in my bed.
Oh, dear. Anywho.
Oh, crap.
Oh, jeez. All right. Well, let's go on to what's been streaming in your bubble.
What's been streaming in my bubble, eh? Mm-hmm. I had to think. Remember, I didn't see that there was a second page, so I have to see what's been streaming in my bubble. Okay, so I finally started watching Ted Lasso, which, so good. Like, have you watched it at all?
I have not. I need you to should. Get on that.
You should. It's like, but I made the mistake of deciding to watch it with my husband. It's taking forever. Like, I just want to watch it on my own, and then we can talk about it later so I can just burn through it. But it's nice to, like, have to. To watch with him. So I've been watching Ted Lasso, watching The Mandalorian, literally anything with Pedro Pascal. I watched Narcos a couple of times. I realized that I have very little opportunity to actually watch Narcos because it's almost all in Spanish and I don't speak Spanish. So, and it's all really, really violent. Like, who knew a show about drug cartels would be so violent?
Huh.
Huh. That's so crazy.
That's so funny.
I feel like I talked about what's streaming in my bubble, like, at the beginning of this. Because, yeah, so The Last of Us, I've watched a million times. I'm dying for more Bridgerton. Dying for more Our Flag Means Death.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just give it to me. I watched Shrinking with Jason Segel and Harrison Ford on Apple. Surprisingly heartbreaking, heartwarming, and funny. I really, really liked it. I thought it was great. Carla wants me to watch Beef on Netflix, and I started it, and I was like, I don't like any of these people, so now I have to I was like, you both suck.
I haven't watched that yet, but that's kind of what I gather from the trailer. But I love both those actors. I'm like, so. You...
Oh, yeah, Ali Wong is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And Steven
Yeun.
Steven Yeun. There we go.
He's such a cutie. I love him so much.
Yeah, they're not nice, though. Like, they're not They're not fun, friendly folks. Fun, friendly folks. And I'm trying to find time to go watch the Dungeons & Dragons movie.
Mm-hmm. That movie looks that like it's going to be a lot of fun.
I heard it was really fun and really, really good. And I want that big-ass D20 popcorn bowl. And the only other thing streaming in my bubble is, of course, Dungeons and Daddies. Always.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course. I'm on my
fifth re-listen because I am so cool.
Love it.
I don't even listen to my own podcast, you guys.
Yeah, I don't listen to mine because after spending the time editing, I'm done listening to my voice.
Yeah, that's the same. Like, I edit our podcast, which is bedwedbehead pod on Twitter and bed.wedbehead.pod on Instagram and other social media. You can just look for bedwedbehead pod. So I edit it, and then I'm like, I cannot listen to myself talk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I get so much anxiety because I'm just like, I sound like an idiot / asshole / just mic hog. I don't need to hear that.
Oh my god, one of the things that I have an issue with is, like, I'll be like, where, like, while I'm editing, like, where am I going with this point?
Yeah, Meg, you really suck.
Well, not just that, but no.
Not only do you
not only no, but it's like I'll start rambling about something, I'm like, and as I'm editing, I'm like, where the fuck am I going with this?
Yes.
Oh, yes. it's so cringy. I hate it.
Oh, I get so frustrated because I get so excited talking about something and I'm like, I cannot contain it. Like, I can't wait. And I I'm the worst interrupter because she's like, I'm gonna forget. Like, I've even like got my notebook down and I write down notes while someone else is talking, but I'm like, no.
I've tried that. I'll do that when I need to, but I'll also start writing my note, but then partway through I pick up on what the other person is saying. So I start
and then be like
taking
oh,
shorthand.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
It's just like check marks on a page. Not even words, nothing. And I'm just like, but wait, guys. I don't want to get, like, I don't want you to move past the point that I want to comment on before I can comment. And then I had to be like, remember we talked about 5 minutes ago? Can we circle back to that?
And you know what? That's totally fine to do that because my dumbass does that enough. So it's fine. But real quick with what I have been streaming and my bubble, aside from The Last of Us and being emotionally destroyed. So as of the date of this recording, I still have to watch the last two episodes.
They're the happiest.
I may or may not be putting that off a little bit. Procrastinating, so delaying.
8 and 9, right? Yeah.
Yep. So.
Oh, they're the best. They're the happiest. They're the sweetest. You're going to have a great time.
Oh, I can't wait. Just lots of happy ending, sunshine, roses.
Everyone is happy. You know, the cure comes and everyone, no one's a zombie anymore. No one's infected anymore.
I love it. I can't wait.
Get a giant antifungal cream and just rub it on everybody and they're good. They're fine.
Oh, I just imagine like the backpacks from like Ghostbusters 2 and just spraying everyone with those.
Like, what the hell? Evolution with Dave Duchovny.
Oh my god!
Like, his shoulders of selenium. He's sticking up the alien's butt.
I haven't thought about that movie in a very long time. Holy shit!
Really? I feel like that movie is always just below the surface. Oh, he's just right
there. Amazing. Oh, Meg, that's, I love you. I miss you so much.
That's how I know about selenium.
Oh, anyways. So aside from The Last of Us, hubby and I we just recently finished season 3 of Star Trek Discovery, and I'm absolutely obsessed with that show. But Meg, like you, I'm watching it with my husband, so we have not yet started season 4. And it's taking forever, and I'm slowly dying on the inside.
Have you watched Strange New Worlds at all?
Yes.
I like that.
Thrice. And it's, you know, so far it's just the one season, so it's pretty easy to go back and rewatch.
And it's really nice to watch Anson Mount be hot.
I love him. You know, I was always Team Picard as my favorite Star Trek captain, but to be fair, I haven't seen all like DS9 or any of that shit or whatever.
I've literally only watched Strange New Worlds.
But Captain Pike, the Boy Scout of Starfleet, might usurp Picard, and I'm okay with that, I think.
Yeah.
But
you okay?
I think, and his hair's, because he's got amazing hair.
He does.
And it's like so his character shows up in season 3 of Star Plot Trek twist. Discovery. Now we're talking Star Trek. But his hair isn't as fantastic in Discovery as it gets in Strange New World. So while I still really enjoyed him in Discovery, sorry, spoilers, while we're watching season 3, I was like, his hair is so much better in Strange New World. And my husband's like, you need to calm down.
Let me get a ShamWow underneath you. If we're going to continue on this journey.
Yep. Other than that, yeah, we finished Bad Batch. We have to catch up on Mandalorian. And then one of the shows that my husband started watching that got me hooked on is Homestead Rescue. So the latest season dropped on Discovery Plus. And so we've been watching that because I love that show. I love the Rainies and Homestead. And every time I watch it, I'm like, we could totally do this. We can't do it at all.
No,
but
like,
it's
I feel like I wish my husband would watch that instead of like whatever gold show he Gold Rush. Up on. No, Gold Rush, Alaskan Gold, Gold Rush Part 6. I don't know.
Parker's like, Trail, and I'm
Bering,
so Bering sick. I know that
sea, Gold Bering Sea Gold. I don't know. I don't. It's just it's always gold.
See, at least Timmy has. He only really watches Gold Rush, mm-hmm. and then like the Parker's Trail. Shows or whatever, but So I know way too much about Gold Rush than I care to admit. And that's
lately,
all his fault.
Lately, Psych has been on in my house a lot, though. And
I feel
not
like
mad
Psych is
that.
Almost always on at your guys' yeah. house.
The other thing, I've been, like, it's in my streaming bubble. It's not even really. I've really got back on my Hunger Games train. And, I'm watching the movies with my oldest. And we have the last movie yet to go. But I reread the books because I haven't read them in a while. And let me tell you, rereading them when you have kids that age, like, it's every time. What I love about those books is every single time I reread them, I'm in a different point in my life. So I get something very different. And I feel like that's something that's a staple of a really great book, is that every time you read it, you find something different and your life's perspective changes how you read the book. So you never really read the same book twice because it's different for you. Mm-hmm. But I reread them. And then, like the thirsty little Hunger Games bitch I am, I found out that there is a fan fiction. Don't look at me like that.
I didn't.
It's called PETA's Games. And it's the Hunger Games trilogy from PETA's point of view. And it's actually really, really well written. It's actually like a very, like, I know everyone hears fanfic and they're like, horniness. It's not like, it's not porn. It's not smut or anything like that. It's the Hunger Games just from PETA's point of view. And PETA is like my favorite character because I'm a basic bitch. And he's also the best character in the books. I don't care. You can come fucking fight me if you want to. If you want to have beef over books that were printed over 20 years, like 20 years ago almost, I will fight you.
Oh,
I am fighting my daughter right now. She hasn't read the books yet. She's only seen the movies and she's like, I don't know, Pete is kind of annoying. I'm like, get that out. How dare you? Which is why we haven't watched the last movie yet, because I'm like, I can't. If you're gonna disparage my boy,
if you're gonna poo-poo on it,
if you're gonna poo-poo be like on that, Ida Malark, the best character in Pan Am, no ma'am. You don't get PETA if you're gonna be like that. See, this is the Midwest goodbye.
We this is the Midwest goodbye. Ago. Yep. We sure, you know what? In editing, it's usually at least 45 minutes.
Now we're ready to slap the thighs and say, welp.
Well, and start heading to the door, and then we'll stand there for another 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, and grab a beer, because you have to have a beer.
Yep, road soda.
And in the yard. In the yard, we'll talk for a little while. I'll get in my car, and we'll sit there, and you'll stand outside my car, and we'll talk through the window for another 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
And the next day, I'll finally leave.
Oh, yeah, you betcha.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you know. You'll be like, hang on, I got leftovers for you, and you'll run back into the house, but I won't leave then. Oh no.
Because you want that plate. Yeah.
And I want that plate. I want that margarine tub full of casserole.
And like the 14 different creamy salads, air quote salads.
You know the best part of this is I live about half hour from Jen. We could have easily done this in person. It would probably take about 6 times as long for me to ever get home.
Probably, yeah.
Because we have not seen each other in forever.
Forever.
Like,
I know.
I think it's been actual years now.
Fuck, the last time I got Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah. So.
That's been like a year?
More than a year. like a year! Was
awkward. I'm so sorry. And on that... And on that really weird note, I want to thank my dear friend Meg/Fancy, because we're fancy and schmancy, for joining me today to talk about this goddamn show that I still don't know why I fucking love it, but I do.
Yes, you do. You I know do. What? Just embrace it. Just don't be embarrassed. Don't.
I'm
don't
not.
Be sad.
It vexes me that I love it
don't
so
be
much.
Vexed. Don't be vexed. It's the bane of your.
It is. It is the bane of my existence, of my horny existence.
You have to stop. I can't stop. You have to stop.
Oh, so, all right. Where was I? Yes. Thank you for joining me today, Meg. And everyone, make sure you go listen to Bedwetter Behead, where her and her co-host, the co-host Carla, play Fuck, Marry, Kill with fictional characters. So, It's a lot of fun.
At least two Bridgerton episodes.
At least. Was I in a Bridgerton? No, I did Gilmore Girls.
You did Gilmore Girls. I think you did a Bridgerton. Maybe not.
Did I do a Bridgerton?
I don't know. No, maybe. I think Lauren and Rachel did a Bridgerton episode.
But
Either way. We and Bedwood Behead played Bedwood Behead. We did play one with my friend Amy. I remember that because we recorded it and the recording got corrupted and we had to re-record and we had to change one of the characters.
Oh.
Which is how we wound up playing with Colin instead of, like, and this was season one, like, instead of a character we really wanted to, because we're like, well, shit.
Yeah. I hate it when that happens.
The whole thing gone, and it was so good.
Oh, my God. That's always so disappointing. So frustrating. Mm-hmm. But, yes.
I'll find it in 3 years.
It's a great podcast. You guys should listen to it. It's a lot of fun.
A lot of horniness.
And a lot of horniness in hearing these two women justify their picks. It's something.
There's a lot of fights. There's a lot of pasta talk. There's a lot of practicality placed on impractical characters. We do, one of our favorite episodes is the Horror Hunks.
Where I was just thinking of that one.
With Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, and Jason Voorhees. And to try and justify keeping any of these alive and sleeping with one of them and then marrying one of them. Is probably the most fun I've had recording because they're so out of this world awful and evil that to try and be like, well, Freddy Krueger, he's not, he won't fold the laundry because he's got knives for fingers and he'll cut, like, it's
amazing.
Who has
the most land and location.
Jason has lakeside property, which is like a real plus in our books. One of our first episodes, we do The Office, and Dwight Schrute having huge tracts of land is a big bonus for Dwight.
Oh my God. I love it. I love it so much. So everyone, make sure you go listen to an episode or 12. You can find them on a podcast player near you. I, of course, want to thank all my lovely bubblies for listening today. And as usual, keep streaming. Bye. That didn't come through. You got to do it again.
Hi, bitch.
Bye.
'Cause use the bye, bitch. That sounds so mean.
Oh, I'm keep. It might be, just be a post credit.
That'll
or something.
Be like a new production thing. You know, at the end of the show, it's like Remulon. It'll just be bye, bitch.
Bye, bitch. Bye, bitch productions. Oh my God, I love it. Oh my God, the Wild Women of Podcasting. That's our production company. Bye, bitch.
Bye, bitch.